One of the industries with the biggest environmental impact is undergoing a major push for sustainability. What will it take to get there? Hi, everybody. I'm Bob Bowman, Editor-in-Chief of Supply Chain Brain, and this is the Supply Chain Brain Podcast. At an estimated market size of more than $1 trillion in the U.S. alone, the food service industry has a devastating impact on the environment. Plastic waste from packaging is a growing environmental crisis. Related transportation activities spew huge volumes of greenhouse gases into the air. And food waste, by one estimate, amounts to 80 million tons a year, or 38% of all the food in America. If we are to avoid a global environmental catastrophe, the industry must become far more sustainable than it is today. On this episode, we're going to explore what that path needs to look like. My guest is Remy Garson, CEO of Remcoda, a global supply partner to the food service, janitorial and sanitation, and retail industries. We'll talk about the shift to eco-friendly packaging and other plastic alternatives, ways to cut down on emissions generated by the transportation of food and supplies, the need to manage returns and reduce food waste, and the economic realities that complicate the implementation of these measures. We need best practices to be put into action now to create a greener food service supply chain. Here's my conversation with Remy Garson. Remy Garson, welcome to the show.
Good to be here, Bob. Thank you.
Remy, give me a brief description, please, of Remcoda.
Remcoda is a family business. It was started by my father about 40 years ago. He was a supply chain pioneer heading out overseas, mostly into China when China first opened to the West. But even before that, he was in Korea setting up supply chain infrastructure. So effectively, how do you make product overseas and then import that product into the United States? Over the course of several decades, he became very well known in overseas manufacturing of garments, mostly for the retail industry. And about 10 years ago, when the next generation of the family stepped into leadership roles in the company, we took that supply chain infrastructure that he had set up for the garment industry, for retail, and we applied it to a greater number of industries. So today we work in the retail industry, the food service industry, and the JanSan industry. But what we do is we take all the aspects of the supply chain and we manage it in-house. So anything that is required from taking an idea of a product all the way through a global supply chain process to its final delivery is managed by us in-house. So that's research and development around products, trends, packaging, concepts, ideas, innovations. Then a global sourcing operation that extends to 9 countries across 4 different continents. Basically, how and where and for what cost are we making that product? Then production management, production oversight, manufacturing itself, into quality assurance, inspections, audits, all the way then to international freight forwarding, bringing the product here, customs, into the ports, drayage from the ports, into our variety of warehouses across a full national footprint, and then processing the orders and then shipping the orders out through to last mile delivery. So all of that ecosystem under one roof.
The complete picture. Great. I do want to talk today specifically about the food service industry, which is one of your emphases. And let's go through the various stages that you described in getting product into market and aftermarket and the like. Let's start regarding environmental concerns and best practices in food service on the manufacturing side. What are the big concerns there? What's going on there in order to control that within manufacturing?
Okay. So when we talk about that we're a food service distributor or supplier to distributors mostly, what basically we're referring to is anything that's not center of plate. So this is your cups, your plates, your cutlery, your to-go containers, foil, what have you, the full gamut. We do not make products, generally speaking, that are ingested into the body. So we are what would be considered a non-foods supplier for the food service industry.
Okay.
And the vast majority of what we do, and in fact, the vast majority of the consumption of this type of product by the United States population and the global population as a whole, is in disposables. And people would be shocked to understand the sheer volume of disposable product that we go through as a people. And this was effectively put with jet fuel through the pandemic. So before the pandemic, takeout ordering in was popular. In the pandemic, it became the only way that people were really consuming food other than buying it and making it themselves from the supermarket. And as we've come out of the pandemic, it's just way more popular. Technology has taken a huge leap forward. People have Grubhub, Seamless, Uber Eats. Whenever you order your product from those places, take a look at how much disposable food service product comes with your order. It's a lot. And in fact, there's been a lot of legislation around trying to limit the amount of disposable food service product that comes with those packages when you order in from takeout to try to help the environmental outlook of all of this consumption. But I would say the biggest factor from an environmental standpoint in the non-foods disposable space is the use of single-use plastics and foam. Foam is extremely toxic to the environment. It is not recyclable at all. Single-use plastics are recyclable to an extent. People don't realize this, but there are challenges to recycling black plastic, which people like because it's a lot sleeker and more upscale. It's better for more expensive restaurants. But between those two, single-use plastics and foam, it is a lot of waste. And so the big movement, I call it the green rush, internally in my company, is as the industry moves away from this single use into more sustainable options, how does that look? Who's leading the charge? How are we advancing that movement? That's really where we're focused on. And so there's three ways that we're really seeing the drivers away from single-use plastics and foam into more sustainable options. The first is the consumer. The consumer is getting more conscious. They're becoming more concerned with their environmental impacts. And as a result of that, they are starting to vote with their dollars. They're choosing to spend more money to support single-use plastic and foam becoming a thing of the past and moving into more environmentally friendly alternatives like bagasse, birchwood, molded fiber, plastic-free paper, what have you. Mm-hmm. The second thing is government regulations. Certain communities that tend to be more progressive in this country are starting to put bans on foam. In our industry, we say foam is king. In certain areas, foam is king. And you would be shocked at the amount of volume that these large food service distributors like Sysco, US Foods, Gordon Foods, Performance Food Group are purchasing foam. Truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of it. But as certain communities like Denver, like Burlington, Vermont, like New York, like New Jersey, a lot of areas in California, a lot of areas in the Pacific Northwest are kind of municipality by municipality starting to put in regulations, we're seeing a shift away from foam and going to these more sustainable alternatives. The third are just trends in food service. There's a big trend towards more healthy eating, salads, just more healthy options. We all know what they are. Those businesses will choose to purchase products that are more environmentally friendly. And then a lot of the large corporations that do unhealthy foods are realizing, hey, we need to be in on this trend. And so you're seeing fast food places like even McDonald's shifting into environmentally friendly alternatives to single-use plastics and foam.
And are you able to determine that when a customer patronizes a particular food service organization or company, that the reason behind that is that company's commitment to greater sustainability?
So I think you have to look at it as a total picture. There's no one-size-fits-all answer for anybody. There are certain people who are extremely religious about supporting companies that have good practices towards the environment. But that, I would say, is the minority. People are going to make their decisions mostly driven by the cost. That's just the truth. And you could see that when you look at outside of America. Look at parts of Asia that are not as prosperous as the United States. Look in South America, where people, to the most part, are living on lower wages than they are in the United States. These areas, no matter how much they care about the environment, they may even have the Amazons in their country. At the end of the day, they're more concerned with putting food on their table for their families. And so you don't see the shift towards environmentally friendly disposables in these poorer regions of the world, which still at this point make up the majority of the world. So the cost is really important. If you go into Europe, Europe has been very aggressive about putting in single-use plastic directives, which are designed to reduce the amount of single-use plastic waste. So Europe is ahead of the United States, but that has made their cost of products go up. It's led to inflation. And the counterweight to that are the advancements in technology, because all of these environmentally friendly alternatives to packaging, your to-go container that's made of molded fiber that can compost in your garden, the plastic-free cup that our company is now supplying to Delta Airlines, they have started out more expensive. Mm-hmm. But like any other technology, like the flat screen TV or the iPhone or the computer, when a technology is new, it's really expensive. But as that technology improves, the manufacturing companies behind these products become more efficient, get more volume, allowing them to buy their raw materials in greater volumes that lead to discounted pricing, and so on, you start to see the price of these alternatives coming down. Now, will they ever get as cheap as foam? No, I don't think that's going to happen. But you can close the gap enough that the consumer will say, okay, the difference between what I could pay if I take my item from foam versus if I use this more environmentally friendly alternative is now shrunk enough that my good conscience and my care for the environment is enough that I'm willing to pay a little bit more.
Even so, that consumer is generally going to be from a more developed country, from a richer country, and probably going to have a higher income than, as you say, the poor countries that are less aware of that.
Correct. Yeah. And I think that will change over time as the cost factors start to come down as the technology improves. Mm-hmm. For now, that's what we're seeing.
I wonder also for those companies, a handful of companies, maybe they're very proactive in introducing sustainable materials, maybe even getting ahead of regulations. I wonder how good a job they're doing of conveying that message to the public. I mean, when I go and patronize one of these companies that I feel like is doing a good job, I haven't heard them tell me that. I have to discover it for myself. I wonder if they should be putting out the message more.
I agree with you. I think they could do a better job. You see it a little bit. There are some companies, for example, where they'll sell you your food, like a salad bowl. But if you are willing to pay a little bit more, you can get it in a reusable bowl. And then if you bring that bowl back the next time you patron the store, you can save money off your bill. These types of programs are marketed and they are to a great extent successful in their local communities. But I would agree with you, these companies should do more to market their product. I think the reason they don't is because when the consumer is deciding whether they want to buy from company A or company B, cost, quality of food, convenience, these things are ranked higher in the average consumer's mind than the environmental impact of the product that it's served to them in. And it's just, we probably are not going to be able to reverse that very easily.
Okay, let's touch, Remy, on the way in which these products get to market. That is, of course, the logistics segment. What is going on there in order to achieve better sustainability for that segment?
Companies are taking steps to reduce the environmental impact of the logistics of getting the product from manufacturer point to delivery point by doing things like, A, setting up nearshore or onshore manufacturing for certain items. So we've seen a lot of companies move from far offshore markets in Asia with their factories and set up in, for example, Mexico. So a lot of Chinese companies actually wanting to get closer to the market are setting up manufacturing in towns like Monterrey, Mexico, which also is where Tesla now has a factory and many other U.S. manufacturers. So in this case, they're taking advantage of the USMCA trade law, which lowered the cost of trans-country shipping between the United States, Canada, and Mexico, taking advantage of, quite frankly, lower cost labor market in Mexico, a bit more manufacturing infrastructure available already in Mexico, since so much manufacturing infrastructure has left the United States over the last 40 years. And by doing so, you've now reduced the amount of distance and thus reduced the cost of the shipping, and in so doing, also the environmental impact. So that's one thing. A lot of trucking companies are setting up with advanced logistics software. They use this to optimize their routes. So you're using things like AI, machine learning, to study historical data around shipping for these large companies that have tons of shipments leaving every single day, and then taking into account forecasts and planning algorithms around what the future shipping is going to look like to ultimately create route optimizations, where you don't have trucks going out of their way to make deliveries, or you're intelligently loading product onto trucks that will allow for multi-stop deliveries so that you are reducing the amount of time that you have empty trucks. Then once the truck makes its delivery, having it pick up product very close to where it delivered to then make sure that on its return route, it's returning with goods in the truck, thus again, reducing the amount of what we call empty backhauls. So all this type of stuff, efficient routes, reducing delivery times, lower associated carbon footprints, all very helpful in the logistics space.
And then finally, another aspect, which I'm sure is a major problem in food service, and that is waste. How are food service companies reducing waste after usage?
You have to look at waste very holistically. What kind of waste is it, and what could that waste do after it's quote-unquote considered quote-unquote waste? Depending on the waste, it could be something that could be donated to a nonprofit. And I'll make a great example. When we had the pandemic, if you'll remember, the first pandemic-related quote-unquote PPE item that exploded was hand sanitizer. Everybody believed that hand sanitizer would save you from getting COVID. Mm-hmm. And so companies like Purell and all kinds of upstart companies that never made, that maybe they were making essential oils and they reconfigured their facilities to create hand sanitizer, or they were making alcohol products and they reconfigured, instead of making wine, they started making hand sanitizer. There was this huge boom in supply of hand sanitizer. And then we very quickly realized, wait a second, COVID's actually spread through droplets out of the mouth. We should be focusing more on masks. And then masks became the next item that went crazy. Well, in that period of time where everybody thought it was sanitizer, there was a huge influx of sanitizer that went into the market. Sanitizer that has an expiration date and then becomes hazardous waste once it passes its expiration date due to the fact that there's ethanol in it. So our company, one thing we did, again, this is just meant to be an example of how you can treat waste. We looked at collecting all that expired hand sanitizer. We extracted out the ethanol, and we were then able to find usages for that ethanol in the market. In some cases, distributing it back as hand sanitizer to nonprofits that were working in hurricane relief efforts or other uses for hand sanitizer, or selling ethanol back to certain ethanol distributors, effectively finding ways to recycle, reuse, or donate that waste.
Remy Garson of Remcoda, I want to thank you so much for telling us a little bit about what Remcoda is doing in the area of environmental and sustainability in food service, as well as the big issues there for food service companies, progress that's already been made, and progress yet to be made. Thanks for very much for being with me today.
Thank you, Bob. Pleasure to be here.
That was my conversation with Remy Garson of Remcoda, talking about the need for a greener food service supply chain. We're online at www.supplychainbrain.com, where we post a new episode of this podcast for streaming or downloading every Friday. You can also read our Think Tank blog, watch thousands of videos, and access all of our other content, including the digital edition of our magazine. Look for us on Facebook and LinkedIn, follow us on X at @scbrain, and also watch videos on our YouTube channel. You can also download or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Got any comments or suggestions on this or any episode? Email me at rbowman@supplychainbrain.com. Stay well, and see you next time.